Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. Despite the name, it's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand a little more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Skyway helps you know more, do more, and win more in the government market. To learn more, visit skywayacq.com. Our topic today is ethics in government contracting. Let's get started. So we're not going to talk politics on the podcast, but we're recording this during election season, and it brings to the forefront that ethics is very important in the business world. And that's all I will say about that.
And one of my favorite Warren Buffett quotes is, trust is like oxygen. You only notice it when it's not in the room. And in government contracts, it's kind of the same thing, where ethics is something that nobody really talks about that much until it kind of blows up.
Until things go bad. And like a lot of other things in government contracts, what can be an unwritten requirement in the private industry is a written requirement in the government world. There are formal requirements for ethics and compliance programs in the government world, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we talk about that, let's say thanks.
Yeah, thanks to Terry Wilt. She's a big follower of us on LinkedIn. She shares a lot of our content, has been doing for a while. So Terry Wilt, thanks for sharing our podcasts, our videos, all of our stuff. And so I appreciate that you're actively engaging on LinkedIn.
All right, so what are the requirements for business ethics in the government world? This goes back to the FAR again, FAR time. FAR 52203-13 is the Contractor Code of Business Ethics and Conduct, and it is a requirement for all contracts over $5.5 million. But...
Oh, and the assumption here is, you heard that part about it applies to contracts over $5.5 million, and the assumption is it applies to everything. It doesn't apply to everything, and there's some nuance to that. So I want to make sure that sometimes companies will overbuild an ethics program they don't really need to, or for that matter, they underbuild too. And the other part is, contractors probably haven't read this. And honestly, as a contracting officer, I knew what this clause was. I knew it was in there, but I hadn't really ever gone through it before either. So, I mean, the level of nuance in here is worth talking about.
Yeah, it seems like I know what business ethics and conduct is. I probably don't need to read the details of that one. But I'm going to read them right now.
We're not going to read. We're going to highlight.
What does the clause actually say? It says the contractor shall, and that means you have to do it. It's not a nice to have. Shall have a written code of business ethics and conduct available to each employee on the contract. And available means what? Maybe it's posted on the website. Maybe it's in the little package that new employees get. It's probably annual training for it. All right, so you have to have a written code of business ethics and conduct. Your employees have to be able to access it. Second, contractors shall exercise due diligence to prevent and detect criminal conduct. So you actually have to do stuff proactively to try to deter people from doing the wrong thing. And what does that mean? One simple example is time card fraud. You have to have some system to make sure that employees are actually working the hours that they're billing.
Yeah, that's your attempt to detect. You can't just have a system that says, here's how we're going to fire people after they screw up. You have to be more proactive than that.
Right. Third thing, contractors shall otherwise promote an organizational culture that encourages ethical conduct and a commitment to compliance with the law. And that's where you have to demonstrate ethics, right? You can't have a bunch of unethical behavior at the top and say, everybody else do the right thing. And the last thing we'll talk about, and this is the most important one, I think, contractors shall timely disclose to the government whenever there is credible evidence of fraud, conflict of interest, bribery, or gratuity violations, or violation of the Civil False Claims Act, which is, again, that's like where you're billing hours that you didn't actually work. But the important thing I'm trying to get across here, it's the disclosure. You have to tell the government when something goes wrong, not just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, and the principle of problems collect interest over time applies here. The longer you don't disclose, the more cranky the results are going to be.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, paragraph C of the clause is business ethics awareness and compliance program and internal control system. So this gets into some of what you have to do in order to be compliant.
And the first thing to point out here is this paragraph specifically states that it does not apply to small businesses or to contracts for commercial items. So out of the gate, this is one of the things that this is the reason I wanted to cover this topic, is that a lot of times people think this applies to everything. It doesn't apply to everything. Now, there's nuance to this, which we'll get into, but right in the clause, it says doesn't apply to small business or commercial items. So,
okay, we'll get into that more in a minute. The clause itself says, I'm paraphrasing, but within 90 days after award, the contractor shall have an ongoing business ethics and awareness compliance program that includes standards and procedures, an internal control system, effective training programs, and how they otherwise share information appropriate to each individual's roles and responsibilities. So not everyone needs the same kind of training. Like a person working on the contract on the line doesn't need the same kind of training as maybe someone in the finance department or something like that of the company.
And I love how the word effective is in there. So, and that's a subjective term. But the expectation is that this training will be effective. It won't just, as you were alluding to, you give somebody training that's not relevant to what they do, it's not effective. Like teaching this guy about wire fraud when he works on the production line, it's not effective. So that's the kind of stuff is they want you to take it seriously.
Yeah, and every company has a different opinion of what is effective training. And it's all circumstantial. In some cases, maybe just saying, here's your training and handing them a sheet of paper, or maybe just sending them an email that says, here's our ethics compliance program. Maybe that's enough for a small company. Maybe it's in-person training. Maybe it's an annual training video or webinar kind of thing that they have to watch. But it's different for different companies, and it should be. It's what's appropriate for you. Another important thing to note is that the training has to be provided to your employees, if you're a contractor, to your employees, agents, and to your subs. Your subs may have their own training programs.
And the expectation or requirement, actually, is you have to have an internal control system that shall, and there's a whole bunch of bullets, but we'll pick some of the highlights here, explains basically how are you going to notify the government when you find something, right? What is your communication process, essentially? And then what corrective measures are you going to have if and how would you carry them out? And one that's interesting is I love this, the assignment of responsibility at a sufficiently high level and adequate resources to ensure blah, 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 that it's taken care of. In other words, they want to make sure it's taken seriously. This is not something that you give to, some person who's eight layers from the CEO that's never actually going to get managed. I mean, that's why it's written this way, right?
Yeah, most plans say that there's like a company ethics officer that reports directly to the CEO or, it's a high level thing. It's to make sure that issues get the attention that they deserve.
And then you've got the requirement for periodic risk assessment, reviews, evaluations, monitoring. And then I love this, auditing to detect criminal conduct. So the expectation, which you had started with a few minutes ago, is you got to use it.
You actually have to stuff.
Exactly. And then timely disclosure in writing. Like how are you going to notify the government?
And you've actually, through Skyway, you've actually helped companies get these kind of things in place, right?
Yeah, and we talked about when a company is just about to become a large business, when they're a large small business and they jump over or trip over the wire and become a large business. Well, that was the case here, is that they had become a large business. All of a sudden, they realized, I think there might be some ethics stuff, and they called us. And I said, yeah, actually, there's a whole clause for it. And they said, really? So we walked them through the whole thing. We set up the framework of an ethics plan that does all these things, right? But this is an example of, like, this is a clause. It's in by reference. It's not even in full text.
Yeah, you got to look it up.
And you got to know that it's in there. And so it's one of those that if you never have an ethical problem, nobody will ever know that you had no plan. But yikes if you don't. So that's
right.
And that's why this company invested the time in having us build something for them that now they can use forever.
I want to mention one last thing about the clause that I didn't actually know. Imagine this. Got to read these things. The disclosure requirement. We're talking about how disclosure was important. The disclosure requirement for a contract continues until at least 3 years after the final payment on the contract. So if you find out there's something bad happened 2 years after your contract is over, you are still obligated to notify the government and look into it. I think most people at that point are like, whoo, that one's over. Glad you don't have to say anything about that. No, you do. You have to report even after it's long over.
Talk about the shadow of the past.
It's like, hey, man, that guy doesn't even work for us anymore.
And remember that paragraph D1, which refers to subcontracts, You have to flow this down to any subcontract worth $5.5 million or that lasts more than 120 days or 4 months. So if you have subcontracts worth $5.5 million and lasted 4 months, then you've got to do something. And it says the substance of this clause.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be the clause exactly, but you have to ensure your subcontractors have some kind of system to ensure ethics and compliance with all this stuff. And remember, small businesses are exempt from the requirements for a formal system. And I think that's just because this can be a lot of work and a lot of time and energy put in to prevent what? At, you know, small businesses, small contracts. I've talked about this before with government audit agencies. What are they looking at first? They're looking at the $500 million contracts, not the $50,000 contracts. Why? Because there's more money at risk there. Would you rather protect the taxpayers from fraud in the millions or billions? I don't know. Or would you rather protect the taxpayers from fraud for a $50,000 effort? It's all a scale thing, right? So small businesses don't enforce a lot of extra things that drive costs. Probably the risk is not as high that the government's going to lose out and the taxpayers are going to be defrauded of a major amount of money.
Yeah, and for all the stuff that we sometimes find in the FAR that creates work for people that we feel like is non-value added, let's give credit to the FAR on this one. They actually exempted small businesses and probably saved us this industry on both sides, you know, a couple thousand hours a year managing an ethics program for a $1 million contractor.
Okay, let's anchor this in the time zones. For the acquisition time zones, this is something that you need to be aware of in the RFP zone. When you're writing your proposal, contractors need to be aware of whether or not this is going to be a requirement for you. In your proposal, you're probably going to have to prove that you either have a compliance, an ethics and compliance plan in place, or prove that you're going to have one if you're just tripping over that threshold where it's required.
The cool thing about this is once you write it the first time, you should be tweaking it from then on, right? that's why it's so important to not trip over the line into being a large business and all of a sudden the thing applies and you got to write this whole ethics plan amidst everything else you're doing for the proposal.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of lessons in there. And then on the execution time zones, this is probably going to come up in the kickoff because remember, you got to show it within 90 days. And then, of course, you know, during performance, is how are you performing? How are you watching all this stuff?
Yeah, and it turns out post-execution, for up to 3 years post-execution after the contract's over, it still applies. What do you know? Let's talk about why this is so important. Why is ethics important? I'm back to that politics thing again. Ethics is very important.
It's about the application of trust. I mean, it's really what this comes down to. I used the Warren Buffett quote to open this podcast. And so in the private sector, trust can be implied, right? It's expected, and it doesn't really have to be that documented. It can be, but it doesn't really have to be, because you can use like the 99% rule. And the 99% rule says 99% of people and companies are okay. It's that 1% that's a schmuck that you got to deal with, right? And so you don't have to write all of your policies to the 1%. I mean, you can write all your policies to 99% and just trust that most of the time things are going to play out. But
the market takes care of it. If the 1% of companies that are bad actors generally get caught, go out of business, end up in jail or whatever. So the market takes care of that stuff.
Yeah, but in the government market, can't really just ignore the 1%.
Right. And so that's why we have rules. Why was a rule created? Like we always say, somebody did something wrong. So they had to create a clause that says you will have a program to detect this stuff. And that clause requires you to report to us when you do detect stuff. And it's for the taxpayers, right? As a taxpayer, I expect that if somebody rips me off by ripping off the government through a government contract, I expect that they're going to be punished harshly, right?
Sorry, much flogging. And because the assumption is that we can't trust you. And I know that's unfair and that's not how the private sector works, but because like you just said, the taxpayer is concerned, right? So that's how a lot of these are, they kind of go with the mindset of we have to regulate to the 1%.
Yep. And this is important because it's something that's required by the government that companies might not do if left to their own devices. Most companies don't spend money on things that they don't think are important or that they don't think they need. This is something where, whether you think you need it or not, the government requires you to go through it. Let's talk specifically why the government should care about this, Kevin.
The government should care because make sure that your large businesses know it applies. Don't let them trip over that wire into being a large business and all of a sudden 2 years into your contract there's an ethical situation and they don't have any policies. It's creating work for you. I mean, let's be fair. I mean, yes, it's all bad for the contractor, but this creates a mess because here comes the inspector general and they're like, what do you mean you awarded a contract if somebody doesn't have this? Oh, just mess.
Right. I mean, you're charged with protecting the taxpayers' interests. Make sure that the contracts you let, the people are actually following them, right?
Yeah. And likewise, don't levy this on small businesses. If it doesn't apply, it creates a drag. Yeah. And if you're buying commercial, you're using FAR Part 12 or using commercial procedures, it doesn't apply. Kind of like you just mentioned, the commercial market regulates this. You know, like people who are schmucks, that 1%, this commercial market tends to grind them out. If you only sell to the government, we need some other way to make sure that you're not sneaking in.
Right, because the government market is so big, right? You could rip off one agency and then just go to another agency that has no contact with the agency you just ripped off, right? So there's got to be some system in place to make sure that people just can't go on defrauding one agency after another or one office within an agency after another with the same old tricks.
And this is a risk mitigation step by the government. And what I mean by that is that, yes, there's a possibility that a small business might be defrauding. But the risk of that and the impact of that is much smaller than the larger business. So as a result, they don't make this apply to commercial contracts and small business contracts, where the risk just isn't as big. There are other factors that are impacting whether or not it's an ethical company.
Right. In the commercial market, companies can decide how much ethics they need. I don't mean that as bad as it sounds, but you can create programs and systems to detect fraud based on your own risk tolerance. In the government market, the government tells you, this is what you will do. Here is our risk tolerance that we're passing on to you. So that moves us to why industry should care. Industry should care because for large businesses, this can be an entire department of ethics and compliance of people. It's like you were saying, if the 99% rule, if there's 1% of the people may do something unethical, if you have a 100-person company, that means there's one person that maybe is the bad egg, bad apple, whatever. If you have a 20,000-person company or a 200,000-person company, there's a lot more of that. That 1% is just a lot bigger. It takes a lot more people to track that down and pay attention to it. So it can be an expensive thing, that this compliance program, it can really add up.
And for large government-only items, like, you know, non-commercial ones, this is how the government can protect or try to protect a taxpayer from, like, really widespread fraud. Because, like I mentioned, there's really – if it's a government-only item that no one else buys, and or for that matter, it's a company that the vast majority of what they do is government-only – there needs to be some way that.
Yeah, this holds them accountable, right? It holds them accountable for doing the right thing. So if you are a government contractor, make sure that you have a plan in place. Make sure that it's updated periodically. Make sure that you actually train people on it. And why? Here's how I see it. The government knows there will always be unethical assholes out there. That's the 1% rule. The requirement, it's really there to make sure that companies do the right thing by having these systems in place and processes in place to discover those assholes and report it to the government. When you report it to the government, there's going to be some type of punishment or impact, but not nearly as much as if you covered it up and didn't notify the government.
Or didn't have a plan in place to even be looking for it.
Right. If you don't have any plans at all, if you don't have any compliance programs and things go wrong, the government's not going to be happy when things went wrong. If you have plans in place, but you don't actually follow them and you don't do anything to try to make sure that your employees are following them, the government is going to be very upset when something goes bad. But the flip side is, if you've done what you're supposed to, if you have a plan, if you do training, if you've demonstrated that from the top levels of the companies down, the government understands that sometimes bad things just happen. There are bad people out there. There are people that do things that they're not supposed to. And when that happens, the government will give you some credit if you've done everything right, if you have the programs, if you've been looking, if you discover the fraud and you say, hey, government, here's what happened, here's how we discovered it, the impact, the ramifications are not nearly as severe. Okay, before I really get on a rant, let's wrap this up.
So for me, the key takeaways are, this is a mandatory clause for some contracts, for ones over $5.5 million. And it's not going to apply to every contract, which doesn't apply to small business contracts, doesn't apply to commercial items. And honestly, it's not intended to be an overburdensome red tape, you know, bonanza of extra stuff. I mean, it's really a reasonable attempt, in quotes, to protect the taxpayer and having some way of monitoring contractors' ethics. And one of my concerns that people either don't know it exists and totally ignore it and walk into a wall, or they are terrified and like overreact. And we're trying to find that sweet spot in between.
Yeah, for me, it's all about the disclosure. I think the important part of this is if something bad happens, disclose it to the government and work through it together. It only gets worse if you cover it up, and then you have to cover up the cover up and cover up the cover up.
And there'll be a movie made about you in 10 years.
Yeah. So make sure you understand. Have systems in place. Do what you can to follow those rules and discover if bad things have actually happened. If they have happened, make sure you notify the government, and things will be much more smooth in the future.
And if you need help building the plan, give us a call.
Nice. All right, that's it for today. Talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Would you like to have me or Kevin at your next strategy session, lunch and learn, or company training event? Visit skywaydemo.com to learn more about how to have us visit your organization.